Monday evening, August 31st. This is Rabbi Feldman's share. Tonight's share is sponsored by the Mermelstein family in memory of Shelley's sister.
Thank you very much. I think what was announced for tonight is magical. Okay, so it's rescheduled from last week when it was a holdover from Pisces Shoftim. So even though we've had many mitzvahs fly past us in the intervening time, so that was scheduled. Talk a little bit about magic. So maybe we'll just say a few words about that. There are a number of prohibitions that address the supernatural realm, superstition, and various forms of magic that are mostly contained within Parshas Shoftim. There is one general directive which many of the Rishonim bring as a mitzvah sashay. The Rambam does not explicitly bring it as a mitzvah sashay, and it's somewhat of a discussion in the Mefarshim how he understands it, but the Gemara does seem to interpret it at least as some type of a directive. Torah tells us, Tamim Tia Im Hashem Elokecha. Tamim, as we know, is a word that has praised many of the tzaddikim throughout history in Chumash, and it seems to convey that our relationship with the Kadosh Baruch Hu is to be perfect. What does that mean? Nobody's perfect. It means really perfect in the exclusive sense, that we are to be complete with God and to not think that I'll hedge my bets, and I'll worship God and I'll follow His mitzvahs, and I'll also have a relationship with whatever other forces are out there, not necessarily other gods, because that certainly is a violation of Avodah Zarah. That's one of the Hayvayavars. That's a much bigger deal. But even not that I'm going to worship other gods, but that I believe that there are kochas in the world that are outside of the system of either Teva or Torah and Mitzvahs, and I'll try to cover those bases also. So maybe I might think that. Maybe I will consult astrologers. I'll engage myself in all kinds of superstitious practices, and I'll try to cover those bases as well. So Gemara says in Masechet Pesachim and Daf Kuf Yigimel that that's not the way to be. That Tamim Tia Hashem Elokecha, you shall have a relationship only with God, and not pursue other avenues. Now, what that means about those other avenues is a little bit of a subject of a debate, and a point that we'll come back to is that the Rambam has a belief when it comes to magic and when it comes to many superstitious type things. You know, the Rambam is known as a rationalist, and that's certainly the case here. The Rambam believes that magic and astrology and the like don't really have any muscles to them. They don't have any reality to them. They're all a hoax. They're all fake. And therefore, it's for that reason that we tell the Jews not to be involved with this. This is stupidity. That's the way he writes. And wise people, wise nation of God, should not be involved in such things that are meaningless. And many other Rishonim, perhaps most other Rishonim, did not understand that way. And many other Rishonim believe that there is a chachma here, that there is more in heaven and earth, Maimonides, than is dreamt of in your philosophy. And it could be that there are other forces, who knows. But the prohibition is that we should not avail ourselves of those forces. That we have a direct relationship with HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and therefore for us it's the path of Torah and Mitzvah and Teva and science, but to be involved in anything of another nature, whether or not it's real, whether or not it has any actual power, is not for us. And it's in keeping with the phrase the Gemara has, a big discussion in Rishonim, the Rashba has long too about this, that the Gemara has an expression, the Sechah Shabbos, Ein Mazel Yisrael, which raises the question why it is we say Mazel Tov to people. This is a topic of discussion. And the Gemara seems to be saying that in the way many of the Rishonim understand it, that Ein Mazel Yisrael, that there is Mazel in the world, there is perhaps a Chachma to astrology, but it's not for the Jews. The Jews have a different type of path to follow. So the way the Malbim explains, the way the Ramchal explains in his Svarim, that maybe if HaKadosh Baruch Hu did create other types of forces, maybe yes, maybe no, you can believe in them or not, but that's just not for us. That's not it's not for the Jews. And the Vilna Gaon, who was often perhaps grouped with Rambam and other issues, Vilna Gaon in this issue, in his commentary to the Shulchan Aruch, so he takes strong issue with the Rambam, and he says that the other Rishonim already hit him over the head on this point. The other Rishonim have already outvoted him, and perhaps there is a reality to these other forces, but we're not to be involved. Ein Mazel Yisrael, it's not for us.
So how you feel about these other things, whether you take the Rambam's view that they don't really exist at all, or whether you take the view of others that there may be some chachma there, it's not for us, may lead you to some interesting conclusions. It's interesting because the Gemara says that we're not supposed to consult these astrologers, we're not supposed to consult these fortune tellers. So one, we get the impression that one's really not supposed to consult at all. That's what the Gemara seems to be saying. This is really not an avenue that's meant to pursue. By the way, does it not mean that the Rishonim are maintaining that the astrology column in your local newspaper has actual mushes to it? It doesn't mean that everyone who hangs out a shingle and says that they're a fortune teller or an astrologer is privy to whatever chachma may or may not exist. This means that in theory there may be such a chachma, and maybe somebody can perceive it. It doesn't mean that everyone who's claiming to do so has any kind of correlation to that. But in any event, if one would believe that there is a chachma there, it's just not for us, so that could lead to an unusual conclusion. The Moshe Sternbach has in his shuvah supposition, which I don't know if everyone would be so comfortable with, but it's an interesting expression of this feeling, is that maybe one could come to the conclusion that it would be permissible for somebody to consult an astrologer or a fortune teller if one's intent is to be mechazik in the muna. How so? That he'll look to see what the future holds for him, and he'll see that there is some terrible tragedy that is being stored in his mazel, and therefore he will become all the more inspired to cleave to Torah and mitzvot as his alternate route, and therefore he'll be inspired to such tzidkus. So maybe it's kedai if that's what your purpose is. If your purpose is not to make your decisions based on the astrology, but rather to be inspired to be maskia yourself from that force by adherence to Torah mitzvah, so he thought maybe that might be praiseworthy. Again, that's a little bit of an unusual type of perspective on the issue. Pastor says, the Gemara says, one shouldn't be involved at all. And that would probably be the more common approach, that this is really not something that we're meant to consult. And that's the thrust of the Gemara. Even though some Rishonim quoted as a mitzvah saseh and some Rishonim don't. There are those who invoke in this context, the Gemara has a discussion in Maseches Brachos on Daf Yud, a well-known discussion where the Gemara tells us that Chizkiah HaMelech took ill and Yeshaya HaNavi came to visit him. There's a whole discussion of how exactly that meeting took place. Each one thought the other one should come first. So in order to make a solution, so Kadosh Baruch Hu worked it out that Chizkiah got sick, so Yeshaya would have to come visit him, and that's how they got to meet. And when they met, so Yeshaya gave Chizkiah a mussar. He said to him, why is it that you had decided not to have any children? Why is it that you didn't fulfill the mitzvah of Puravu? So Chizkiah said that I saw, with whatever ability I have to look into the future, I saw that whatever children I would have would not be worthy. I saw that I would have children who would not grow up to be good people. So Sheol gives him mussar about this. Yeshayahu says that's not the way to operate. He says, "Bahadei kashrei derachmana lamalcha, that God's secrets are none of your business. And my mystical ha ishkol amevad, you're supposed to do what you're commanded to do. You have your mitzvot, and it's not your job to look into the future and to see what things hold." So there are some of the Rishonim who want to take that as additional proof that one is not supposed to be looking into the future and fortune telling. And others thought that this is not necessarily such a conclusive proof of Nassim Gestetner has a truth about this in his essays, that maybe this Gemara is just telling us that if one is going to be mevatel a mitzvah, if one is going to abstain from his religious obligations because of his prognostication, then that's inappropriate. There may be other decisions, maybe not. So it's a whole discussion how much one can derive from that Gemara. But in general, so we have this attitude that we find in the Gemara, that it's not proper to be involved in fortune-telling and astrology and the like. We have this directive, whether it's mitzvah say or not, of Talmud Kiyah Mishamolokah. So that's considered to be a broad, positive notion. And then on top of that, so the Gemara gives us a number of specific los essays. And in the context of what we might broadly call magic, which some Rishonim understand that Kishuf is a broad expression for everything under the heading of magic, others understand it differently. The Gemara Maseches Sanhedrin has an interpretation of the word Kishuf that the Shoresh of the word, or the meaning of the word, is that it's Mechashvin Famalia Shamalu, that it does something to the heavenly hosts. So what does that word machashin mean? So in Aramaic it has two different types of meanings that have a similar root. So it could mean, Shuvas HaRivash has a discussion about those both possibilities, that either it could mean that it contradicts God's forces, that we are supposed to be following God's path, and this is an alternative path which takes away, like we know, Eidei HaKasha are Eidim that contradict each other. Or it could mean that we also find the usage of the word in the term of weakening. So it could mean that we have an amuna that means we have an exclusive relationship, and if we're going to be involved in other types of things, then that's going to weaken our relationship with heaven. So it's a little bit of a question how to understand what the Gemara is interpreting in that word. But that's a thrust that the Gemara gives to this term Kishuv. So in the context of Kishuv, so we find a number of separate prohibitions. So on the one hand, there's a prohibition of sorcery, a prohibition of Kishuv in a more specific sense, which would mean to perform magic, to do things that are not explicable through science, to do things that are apparently inexplicable through magical forces. So that would seem to be a violation of Kishuv. So the problem is, if you're the Rambam, so you don't believe that that's even possible. The Rambam doesn't even acknowledge that such a thing could happen. So according to the Rambam, so you'll have to say that Kishuv doesn't mean to actually perform magic, it means to fake magic. It means to fool people into thinking you're doing magic. The problem is, we have another issue for that. So that's the issue of Ma'onein. So Ma'onein, the Gemara Masechet Sanhedrin explains that that is what you do if you are faking magic. If you are pretending to people like you're doing magic, so then the Gemara has expression for this, Achizas Einayim, which roughly translated would be parallel to the English expression sleight of hand. You move your hand so quickly so people can't see what you're doing, so the Gemara focuses on the eyes, more of Achizas Einayim, to grab the eyes. That's a parallel term to a sleight of hand. It means that you'll act in such a tricky way. People won't be able to see what you're doing, and they'll be fooled into thinking you're doing magic. So that's an interesting prohibition, because that's something that we see. So we know that people put on shows, and they pretend to be doing things that are magical, and it seems on the surface like that's a violation of this issue d'oraisa. Now we'll clarify if that's indeed the case, but it seems on the surface to fit the definition of what's going on here. And if you look at the way the early Moni HaMitzvahs describe this issue, so they feel that this is a really terrible thing, because in addition to being under the heading of Ma'oning, but they feel it's also an act of Sheker. So to be fooling people into thinking you can do things that you can't really do, presumably you have all kinds of shady purposes to reshown and machine for doing that, so then that's also a problem of Sheker. It's a problem of Gnevis Das. It's a problem of Lusnevis Ritain Mitzvah. The Rishonim go to town on this. They have all kinds of different criticisms of people who are engaging in this type of behavior. It strikes them as a very negative kind of thing to do. So what does that say about the modern-day magic acts? So are modern-day magic acts included in this prohibition? So there were some who thought that it was. The Chayyadim, for example, in his Sefer, has a criticism of people who have their weddings. He was writing 200 years ago. People who have people perform at weddings and do things that look magical. He thought this was a violation. He thought this was a prohibition. But there were at least a number of contemporary poskim who weren't so convinced that this is necessarily such a problem. Why not? Why should it be permissible? It does seem like it kind of matches the definition of what the Gemara and what the later Svarim are explaining in terms of this prohibition. So the way some poskim explain, and the way that does seem to strike us as being somewhat intuitive, is that a modern-day magician is not trying to convince you that he has any magical powers. In fact, many magicians go by the name illusionist. Illusionist, by definition, means he's telling you that he's doing something that looks different than it is. So the chap of a modern-day illusionist is not to convince you that you have magical powers. It is to try to stump you into figuring out how he did what he did. So really, it's an intellectual game. You know that he's doing something physically possible. You don't know what it is. You don't know how it is that he managed to pull off that it makes it look like he made the Empire State Building disappear or something like that. But you know that there is some physical answer. You don't know what it is. So it's really essentially an intellectual game. So if you're going to go up to David Copperfield and you tell him that you believe that he has magical powers, so he'll be offended. He doesn't want you to think he has actual magical powers. He wants you to think that he's a smart guy who managed to outsmart you in figuring out what he does and try to figure it out. If you think he really has mystical powers, he'll give up the whole thing. You're not going to be impressed with his creativity. So therefore, a lot of the poskim felt that that type of modern-day magic show is permissible, is not under the heading of such a thing. But Moshe Feinstein had a tshuva about this. It was printed not in the Igros Moshe. It was printed in the journal Am HaTorah, the journal is printed by Agudat Yisrael. So he has a little essay there where he talks about this, and he doesn't want to come to a conclusion. He formulates the issue pointing in this direction that he thinks there is a strong basis to permit based on a svara such as this. But he doesn't come to a final conclusion. He says he hasn't been asked to paskin halacha l'maisa, so therefore he's not going to come to a conclusion. And if he was asked to paskin halacha l'maisa, he would try to avoid paskining stuff. He doesn't come to a conclusion, doesn't tell you what he really thinks of halacha l'maisa, but he provides the basis for this, and there are other poskim who do seem to take this approach, that this is the case. There are observant magicians who have a tradition that the approach they should take is that when they're doing their show, so they will reveal one trick. So if they reveal one trick, so then that shows you that all the tricks have an answer that's not mystical, that's not magical, and then you know that the other tricks also have answers, you know what it is, and that's a way of showing that none of this is really kishuf, this is all an intellectual trick. There are those who maybe suggested that if that's the case, so then maybe we should only allow magical shows for adults, because maybe only adults are able to perceive that it's not real magic, and maybe children aren't going to realize that it's not real magic. Maybe they will be fooled, and maybe they'll think that it is real magic. You know, one of my colleagues, Barry Apple, likes to point out that if that was the case, it would go against the commercial. And the conclusion would be, silly rabbit, tricks aren't for kids. Tricks are only for adults. But it's questionable whether you have to come to that conclusion, because chances are the kids also, they know that something's going on. Even young children, when they see the magic shows, they don't think that the person doing it really has mystical powers. They know that the person is playing some kind of game with them. They don't know exactly how he's doing it, but they also probably perceive. There are those who are uncomfortable from a chinuch perspective, that if this is something that is associated with things that the Torah prohibits, so this is the whole Harry Potter debate. Is this a realm that you want your children involved in? So there are those who are more comfortable with it, those who feel it's not really a problem. But as far as strict issur, as far as it being strictly prohibited, so it seems like there is a strong basis to permit based on this approach, that we don't necessarily assume that anybody watching really thinks that there's anything magical going on. Together with these same prohibitions, so we have a prohibition of kosein. So kosein, this in other words, we find has different meanings in modern Hebrew. So in modern Hebrew, so a kosein is a sorcerer. But in Talmudic language, so a kosein is a fortune teller. And the Talmud gives all these categories of people who would set up tables of different types of devices, cards and animal bones and all kinds of different plants, whatever it is they would have, that they would use to try to divine the future, and they would tell people that they were able to figure out the future based on what they were doing. So that is also a prohibition included in its own category. That's called kosein tzonin. And there is a prohibition to do it, and there's also a prohibition to consult such people, to come to ask the fortune teller what's going on. So that may be part of this prohibition. It's also presumably connected to what we mentioned at the beginning, this problem of Tamim Tiyam Asam Alokacha. That's also an issue. There's also a prohibition that's connected to this whole story. That's called Nechus. Nechus also has a different meaning in modern Hebrew. In modern Hebrew, Nechesh means to guess. I can't guess. It's Yisrael Nechesh, what's going on. In Biblical Hebrew and in Talmudical Hebrew, here, nechesh is really a type of superstition. It means that a person is going to make his decision based on factors that are not rational. He's going to look at signs, and he's going to say, based on these signs, that he's going to make his decision whatever he's going to do during the day. So he's going to go outside, he's going to say, well, if I see the cars passing, if a blue car passes, then I will sell my stocks, and if I see a red car pass first, I'll buy stocks. So that's completely not rational. It's not connected to anything involved with the stocks. So there is a prohibition to make your decisions based that way. That's called lo sinachashu. So here there's a little bit of a machlokas Rishonim, how to understand some of the boundaries and how to understand also what's going on here. The Gemara has a statement in the Maseches Chulin, which the Rambam quotes and starts a whole fight with the Raizid and the Tosfos about this, that the way the Rambam interprets the line in the Gemara seems to accuse, and we see that Rishonim don't necessarily see it this way, so the Gemara seems to accuse Eliezer, Eved Avram, of Nechesh. The Gemara has this expression that Kol Nechesh She'eno Ke'Eliezer Ben Avram Eino Nechesh. Nechesh, in order to qualify as actual Nechesh, has to rise to the level of Eliezer, Eved Avram. What are we talking about? So we know the famous section in the Torah about Eliezer, that Avram had sent Eliezer to find a shidduch for Yitzchak. So what does he do? So he sets up this whole test to see which girl is going to come and who's going to feed him and feed his camel, the whole story. So the Rambam quotes this as an example of Nechus, and the Raiv and others disagree because there is a major question here, that to believe that Eliezer is in violation of Nechus is problematic for a number of reasons. First of all, we'd like to believe that Eliezer was a righteous person. Now, even if you want to say that Eliezer is not Jewish, so maybe he's not subject to Yisurim, so there is an opinion in the Gemara that Kisuf is prohibited for Bnei Noach as well, and that would still be surprising for him to engage in such behavior. But most prominently, what would bother us about this sentence is that why is this Nefesh? This is a rational test. That here, what did he want? He wanted to find a Baal Chesed. He wanted to find somebody who's nice, somebody who's generous. So he set up this test to find who's generous, and therefore it succeeded. It turned out that Rivka was indeed on that level, and the test worked. So what's so terrible about that? Why is that superstitious? That seems to be very rational. So some of the Rishonim understood that the Gemara never meant to say that Eliezer is in violation of Nechesh. The Gemara uses this as a test to show what is considered Nechesh, not in terms of the rationality of the issue, which in this case Eliezer was okay, but in terms of the level of commitment. That here he was absolutely committed to this test, and therefore there is a yisod that the Svarim have, that in order to violate Nechus, you have to be completely committed to this money and say that if a blue car passes, I'm going to sell my stocks, 100%. But if it's just one factor in a number of things that you're taking into consideration, well, the market's been going up, and this stock is a solid bet, and I trust the CEO, and that blue car got me a little bit jinxed. So then that's apparently not a violation of Nechus. If it's one of many things that you're throwing into the equation, apparently that's not a problem with Nechus. One could say, based on this, that that's also, I think a little bit Alpidara Chamusser, the word here, that that is on some level a criticism of Eliezer as well. That even though Eliezer's test was rational and it was reasonable to try to set up a test for Chesed, at the same time, his absolute commitment to that test was probably inappropriate. The Gemara does have an expression, including the Gemara elsewhere, in Gemara and Tainish, does include Eliezer in the category of people Shabike Shaloka Hogan. The Gemara says some people asked inappropriate things and ended up paying the price for it, like Yiftach, and some people asked inappropriate things and it worked out well for them. So Eliezer maybe really did make a little bit of a mistake, not necessarily in the gist of what he was trying to do, but the fact that he was absolutely committed to it, that was somewhat inappropriate. And I think there's a little bit of a Musa Haskell there, that we often think that we're looking for a certain midah, so we decide that a certain action, that's 100% equivalent to this midah. A person that does this has this midah, a person that doesn't do this doesn't have this midah. And that's usually not accurate. Sometimes there is a large correlation between certain actions and certain midahs, but there are always exceptions, and there are people who will have that midah and won't act the way you expect them to, and people who will act the way you expect them to and still won't necessarily really have that midah. So for Eliezer to be 100% committed to this test as the indication of who's the Baal Chesed and who's not, maybe there is something a little bit inappropriate about that, but nonetheless, maybe that's not really nechus in of itself. So to take something completely irrational and to completely commit yourself to making a decision based on it, that would seem to be a violation of nechus. To another kula that you find, in addition to that it's mutter if you don't necessarily make it the only issue, as far as I'm also right, that it's also mutter if you don't say it out loud. That if it's just something you're thinking, and you're just making your decision mentally, and you're influenced by what's happening, and that's not rational. So there are a lot of Sfarim have a kula about that as well, that it's only when you tell people out loud, you're doing it because of this, then that's when it's an actual violation of Nefesh. So what about flipping a coin? Let's say a person wants to make a decision based on flipping a coin. Is that a violation of Nefesh? So I would think that it's not. The Moshe Sternbach also has a tshuva, I think, along these lines, if I remember correctly. Because when a person flips a coin, so he's not saying that, oh, if it comes down heads, that's a sign from the heavens that I should go this way. And if it comes down tails, that's a sign from heaven I should go that way. And I believe that there's a message being conveyed in the heads or the tails. That's not really what a person means when he is involved in coin flipping. That a person is saying that he doesn't want to make a decision. He doesn't want to think about it, or he wants it to be random. So this is a way to make a random decision. So indeed, it's random. He'll believe that whatever conclusion comes up is random, and he's looking for something random, or he's looking to be absolved of the responsibility of thinking about it. So presumably, that's not a violation of Nefesh. I think that makes sense, but that's not something that necessarily is connected to Nechus. Also, some people use coin tosses as a way to see what they really want. If they're disappointed by what comes up, and they know that that's they really want to go the other way. If they're happy, they know that's the way they want it to go. That's also presumably not Nechus. But presumably, flipping a coin is not something that people do in order to really believe that there's a sign coming down from heaven. Hi. Why is the Gemara picking up on it? The context seems to be specifically the test. That seems to be our focus here. So this part of the concept of randomness, sometimes you want randomness if you're playing a football game and you have to pick which team goes first, something like that. So we do have a concept, we find in the Chumash already, we have a concept of a goro. So a goro, when that's the intent, that you're just trying to be fair and random, and you therefore give out straws or something like that. So it's also assumed that that's not a violation of Nechus. We also do find sometimes people use a goro, sometimes more for decision-making purposes, but they use matters of Kedusha. Like, for example, there is a concept that's known as the goro hagra. Presumably did not really originate with the goro. It actually has roots already in the Gemara. But there is an idea that people have, it's described in a quite fascinating way in the book of Tzaddik in Our Times, quite overwhelming story there about this, which involves opening a chumash a number of times and then landing on a certain pasuk and using that pasuk as guidance. So in theory, that does seem to border on the type of random nechush kind of decision that is a little problematic, but there is a greater leeway for this when it's based on kedusha, the assumption you're trying to take some hadracha from the chumash, so you find some greater flexibility on this point, especially because this idea is rooted in the Gemara. The Gemara talks about something like this. The Gemara, time of the Gemara, they didn't have printed chumashim. They couldn't open up a chumash and flip to a page. But the Gemara does have this concept of sukkah, sukkah. The Gemara talks about people who would stop children in the street, and the children were presumably involved in learning Tanakh, and they would say to the child, they stop, tell me, what pasuk did you learn today? And the child would then say a pasuk, and they would assume that this pasuk is some type of hadracha for them. So this concept of essentially, that's the way of randomly picking a pasuk and assuming that it has some hadracha to it. That is, you know, something that has somewhat of a masorah to it. So there are those who assume that that's not necessarily within the whole parsha of Nechus. There are other things also which seem somewhat Nechus-like, but also have Talmudic endorsement. There's a whole discussion that you find, for example, the Gemara has in Sachas Horius, statement, and this is relevant to a lot of other things. It's also relevant, even though we came at this from Shoftim, but it's relevant as we approach Rosh Hashanah, because the whole discussion of the concept of Simanim that we have Sunday night, which bothers some people. So Gemara already talks about Simanim also, but there are those who feel the whole concept is Nechus-like. What is this idea that we're invoking these types of foods that sound like things, and how is that in keeping with our Talmudia type of perspective? So the Gemara has various statements. For example, the Gemara says that when they would anoint the king, so they would anoint him on the side of a river, so Gemara and Harius, and they would make a statement that just like this river has a strong flow to it, it flows with power and with straightness, so too your reign, king, should be powerful and straight, something like that. So is that a violation of Nechus? So as the Meiri and others explain, that's not Nechus, that's not saying that, oh, because I did this, this is going to happen. It's saying I'm doing this for good luck. That's not what it's saying. It's saying that this is really a type of inspiration, that we look for something that's going to put us in a mindset of growth and power, and therefore when we make this inauguration, so we're conveying this message. So for example, there is a minig, which is not such a strong minig. You find it really quoted in Shulchan Aruch more here in Hilchos Kishuv. They're saying that it's acceptable to have this minig rather than you have to have this minig. But there is a concept that some have that it's preferable to get married in the first half of the month. It's called B'miboy Halavana, that when the moon, the moon is full in the middle of the month. So the first half of the month, the moon is getting bigger, and the second half of the month, the moon is getting smaller. So one might think that one might say that it's preferable to have, there's a practice that it's preferable to get married in the beginning of the month when the moon is getting bigger. That's considered to be a Shimon Bracha. So That's also raising the question, is that some type of superstition? Are we saying that, oh, because a person gets married during the first half of the month, that's going to make his marriage work out? So presumably not. Presumably what that means is that this is an inspiring message that we want to have, especially when you get married outside. So we want to see this type of inspiration. And that's going to put people in a good frame of mind, but it doesn't mean that it's necessarily going to have any real connection to what's happening. And in that spirit, so there are tshuvas, for example, of Yehuda Hasad and others have tshuvas about this, where they discuss somebody who set up his wedding, and he has the invitations out, and he has the catering hall all set, and the girl already said, yes, everything's in place. And the wedding is set for the second half of the month, the Chayser Halavan. So he asked the question, I just found out about this practice of getting married and maybe he should get married and he should switch the date to the first half of the month, which means he's going to have to cancel the whole, and he's going to have to find an event, he's going to have to find a girl, the whole thing is going to have to be switched around, so he's going to move the date to the beginning of the month. So the response that these posts can have is that, no, that's kefelach. First of all, it's not worth it for all of that. But Agarab, if you're going to do all of that, then that will be nechesh. If you're going to say that this is so important that I have to turn my whole life upside down in order to do this, or else my marriage is not going to work out, so then that would really